Well, this time, about this time last Sunday, Alex was just getting started at preacher training camp there at North MacArthur. I've asked him to talk a little bit about kind of the things he did during the week, but I want to say this. As I mentioned this morning, I was able to go Friday morning and listen to those young men give their lessons. And as I said, Alex did a great job, but I was talking with some of the staff afterwards, and one thing that they said, one in particular said it, you know, he just kind of blew us away. And that's not a surprise with Alex, because we know the kind of young man he is and we know his heart. But he was new there. And usually they assign each staff member several of those young men to work with throughout the week on their lesson to help them if they got questions or they're trying to sort through some things with the passage that they're using. But as I understand it, Alex basically, I don't think he used his staff member all that much, that he kind of did a lot of the things on his own. And so I think that speaks to the kind of young man he is. And also, I'm just proud that he went, let alone that he was able to give the lesson that he was able to. And most of all, I'm proud of his heart and his love for the Lord. But we're going to ask Alex to come up, share God's word with us, and also, if you'd like, Alex, kind of share a little bit about how your week went this week.
Thank you, Billy. He put it a little bit more exaggerated than it really was. I mean, I did need a lot of help. I just didn't ask my own counselor. A lot of us guys actually went and asked other counselors because we all thought, instead of just getting one idea, one person's perspective, let's get a bunch of others. Like, we had several counselors there. We had guys from Elk and North MacArthur, and I think we had a guy from Burns Flat come for a day. But throughout the week, in the mornings, we eat breakfast and then we'll go to a class. And we'll learn a little bit how these guys give their sermons. And then after lunch, we will go and we will do sermon prep, which is preparing for our own sermons that we gotta give that Friday morning. But this is my sermon. If you'll go ahead and turn over to Esther chapter 4. At camp, I started my sermon out this way. I started out talking about Rosa Parks. Because imagine this, it's Thursday evening, you just got off work. It's 1955. You get on the bus to go home, and you see a woman sitting in the front seat of the bus. The bus driver tells her, "Ma'am, I need you to go to the back of the bus and sit." She tells him no. This woman was Rosa Parks, a civil rights activist in American history. She made a stand, ironically, by staying seated in that same seat that she chose from the beginning. And then I wanted to talk about Esther, but like I told them, you can't just start Esther from when Esther appears. You gotta start back in the beginning. There was a king of Persia and Media. This king loved to hold feasts and festivals for all the provinces that belonged in his land. He told his wife one day, "Come forth so I can show you off to these men." She told him no. So he went and talked to his wise men. They told him, "Banish her so the other men's wives will not do the same." Now, back then, every king needed a queen, right? That's where Esther comes in. Esther is the cousin of Mordecai. She was raised by Mordecai after her parents both died. Esther is taken before the king, and there are several other women there because he's asked all the maidens of the land to come before so he can choose a new queen. Eventually he goes through all the queens, he talks to a few of them, and he chooses Esther. Now while this is going down, Esther's cousin Mordecai is sitting at the king's gate. He is waiting to hear of any word of how Esther is doing. And while he's sitting there waiting, he overhears two men. These two men are the king's chamberlains, and they are plotting to overthrow him, to kill him. So he gets word back to Esther, who gets word back to the king. And while both of these are going down, there's a man by the name of Haman. He is the king's second in command, and because of this, because of his position and power, he believes that people should bow before him and show reverence in him just because he has a higher authority than most. And when he goes into the city in front of the king's gate and tells him, "Bow before me," Mordecai stays standing. And when asked why, he says, "I bow before the one and only true living God that we have." So Haman, being a prideful man, and taking a blow to his pride, he starts a plot. So he goes before the king. He tells him, "There's a group of people among your people. They are not your people. They have different laws from you, different traditions. So, and they don't help our people at all. So give me your ring and I will write a decree. This decree will get rid of these people and it will not put any shame on your kingdom, on you." So he goes and writes the decree. He never names the Jews, he never tells him that they are the Jews. So he goes and gets it written. And then Mordecai eventually reads the decree. So he goes in front of the king's gate. This time he's wearing a sackcloth and he's covered in ashes. And while he's sitting there, he's trying to get word to Esther. They talk back and forth. Eventually, Esther tells him this, starting in verse 10 through 11. "Again, Esther spoke unto Hathach and gave him commandment unto Mordecai. All the king's servants do, and the people of the king's provinces do know the law, that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king's inner court without being summoned is but one law, and that is to put him to death." Eventually, Mordecai is able to talk Esther into making a stand. But first, she asks Mordecai to go and gather all the Jews and tell them to pray for me for 3 days, and that she and her handmaidens will do the same. So after the 3 days of praying are over, she goes before the king. And when the king sees her, the only way to not die when you go into the king's inner court is for him to lower a scepter. That way, if he lowers it, he has found favor in you. So she goes before the king, he lowers the scepter, and she makes a couple small requests at first. "Can I meet with you and this guy? Can I meet with you and him again?" Eventually, the king can't sleep at night. So he goes and asks for the Book of Chronicles. And when he reads it, he sees that Mordecai was never rewarded for his service to the king. So he goes and calls Haman up and he says, "What should I do to this man that has saved my life, that has done the greatest honor of them all?" Haman, thinking, "Oh, he must be talking to me," he says, "the greatest honor of all." So he tells him what Haman would want. He would want to wear the royal wardrobe, and he would want to ride on the royal horse, and be paraded around by someone of high power. So this is what the king does. He goes and gets Mordecai. He puts the royal clothes on Mordecai. He puts Mordecai on the royal horse. And then he has Haman parade him around. Ironically, Haman gave Mordecai a reward, the man he's trying to kill. So Haman, having taken another blow, starts to build a gallows, or where you would get hung back in the old days. So he goes and he builds this. And then Esther tells the king that someone has plotted against her people. He asks who. And she tells him that it's Haman. Haman has plotted against her and the Jews. So they get him out, they take him out of the picture, and he is hung on the gallows. They go and write another decree to stop so that the Jews can defend themselves when the attacks come. The point of this sermon is, just because there is a great risk, don't stand by. just because there's a risk. Make a stand. Jesus made a huge stand for us. He knew what the risks were. He knew what that they were going to come true, even if, no matter what happened, if he followed through with God's plan. Yet he still took the risk. So if Jesus can take the risk, why can't we? Please stand as we sing.
Have you been to Jesus for the clean?